Proudfoot's, repeated Bilbo. Also my good sack-filled Bagginses that I welcome back at last to Baggin. Today is my 111th birthday. I am 111 today. Hooray! Hooray! Many happy returns, they shouted, and they hammered joyously on the tables. Bilbo was doing splendidly. This was the sort of stuff they liked, short and obvious. I hope you're all enjoying yourselves as much as I am. Deafening cheers, cries of yes and no, noises of trumpets and horns, pipes and flutes, and other musical instruments. There were, as has been said, many young hobbits present. Hundreds of musical crackers had been pulled. Most of them bore the mark Dale on them, which did not convey much to most of the hobbits, but they all agreed they were marvellous crackers. They contained instruments, small, but of perfect make and enchanting tones. Indeed, in one corner some of the young Tooks and Brandybucks, supposing Uncle Bilbo to have finished, since he had plainly said all that was necessary, now got up an impromptu orchestra and began a merry dance tune. Master Everard Took and Miss Melilot Brandybuck got on a table and with bells in their hands began to dance the Springle Ring, a pretty dance, but rather vigorous. But Bilbo had not finished. Seizing a horn from a youngster nearby, he blew three loud hoots. The noise subsided.
"I shall not keep you long," he cried.
Cheers from all the assembly.
"I have called you all together for a purpose."
Something in the way that he said this made an impression. There was almost silence, and one or two of the Tooks pricked up their ears.
"Indeed, for three purposes. First of all, to tell you that I am immensely fond of you all, and that 111 years is too short a time to live among such excellent and admirable hobbits."
Tremendous outburst of approval.
"I don't know half of you half as well as I should like, and I like less than half of you half as well as you deserve."
This was unexpected and rather difficult. There was some scattered clapping, but most of them were trying to work it out and see if it came to a compliment.
"Secondly, to celebrate my birthday."
Cheers again.
"I should say our birthday, for it is, of course, also the birthday of my heir and nephew, Frodo. He comes of age and into his inheritance today."
Some perfunctory clapping by the elders, and some loud shouts of "Frodo, Frodo, jolly old Frodo," from the juniors. The Sackville Bagginses scowled, and wondered what was meant by "coming into his inheritance."
"Together we score 144. Your numbers were chosen to fit this remarkable total. One gross, if I may use the expression."
No cheers. This was ridiculous. Many of the guests, and especially the Sackville Bagginses, were insulted, feeling sure they had only been asked to fill up the required number like goods in a package. One gross, indeed. Vulgar expression.
"It is also, if I may be allowed to refer to ancient history, the anniversary of my arrival by barrel at Esgaroth on the Long Lake, though the fact that it was my birthday slipped my memory on that occasion. I was only 51 then, and birthdays didn't seem so important. The banquet was very splendid, however, though I had a bad cold at the time, I remember, and could only say, 'Thank you very much.' I now repeat it more correctly. 'Thank you very much for coming to my little party.'"
Obstinate silence. They all feared that a song or some poetry was now imminent, and they were getting bored. Why couldn't he stop talking and let them drink his health? But Bilbo did not sing or recite. He paused for a moment.
"Thirdly and finally," he said, "I wish to make an announcement."
He spoke this last word so loudly and suddenly that everyone sat up who still could.
"I regret to announce that, though, as I said, 71 years is far too short a time to spend among you. This is the end. I am going. I am leaving now. Good bye."
He stepped down and vanished. There was a blinding flash of light, and the guests all blinked. When they opened their eyes, Bilbo was nowhere to be seen. 144 flabbergasted hobbits sat back speechless. Old Odo Proudfoot removed his feet from the table and stamped. Then there was a dead silence, until suddenly, after several deep breaths, every Baggins, Boffin, Took, Brandybuck, Grub, Chub, Burrows, Bulger, Bracegirdle, Brockhouse, Goodbody, Hornblower, and Proudfoot began to talk at once. It was generally agreed that the joke was in very bad taste, and more food and drink were needed to cure the guests of shock and annoyance.
"He's mad, I always said so," was probably the most popular comment.
Even the Tooks, with a few exceptions, thought Bilbo's behaviour was absurd. For the moment, most of them took it for granted that his disappearance was nothing more than a ridiculous prank. But old Rory Brandybuck was not so sure. Neither age nor an enormous dinner had clouded his wits, and he said to his daughter-in-law, Esmeralda,
"There's something fishy in this, my dear. I believe that mad Baggins is off again. Silly old fool. But why worry? He hasn't taken the victuals with him."
He called loudly to Frodo to send the wine round again. Frodo was the only one present who had said nothing. For some time he had sat silently beside Bilbo's empty chair and ignored all remarks and questions. He had enjoyed the joke, of course, even though he had been in the know. He had difficulty in keeping from laughter at the indignant surprise of the guests, but at the same time he felt deeply troubled. He realized suddenly that he loved the old hobbit dearly. Most of the guests went on eating and drinking and discussing Bilbo Baggins's oddities, past and present, but the Sackville Bagginses had already departed in wrath. Frodo didn't want to have any more to do with the party. He gave orders for more wine to be served. Then he got up and drained his own glass silently to the health of Bilbo, and slipped out of the pavilion. As for Bilbo Baggins, even while he was making his speech, he had been fingering the golden ring in his pocket, his magic ring that he had kept secret for so many years. As he stepped down, he slipped it on his finger, and he was never seen by any hobbit in Hobbiton again. He walked briskly back to his hole, and stood for a moment listening with a smile to the din in the pavilion and to the sounds of merrymaking in other parts of the field. Then he went in. He took off his party clothes, folded up and wrapped in tissue paper his embroidered silk waistcoat, and put it away. Then he put on quickly some old untidy garments, and fastened round his waist a worn leather belt. On it he hung a short sword in a battered black leather scabbard. From a locked drawer, smelling of mothballs, he took out an old cloak and hood. They had been locked up as if they were very precious, but they were so patched and weather-stained that their original colour could hardly be guessed. It might have been dark green. They were rather too large for him. He then went into his study, and from a large strong-box took out a bundle wrapped in old cloths, and a leather-bound manuscript, and also a large, bulky envelope. The book and bundle he stuffed into the top of a heavy bag that was standing there, already nearly full. Into the envelope he slipped his golden ring, and its fine chain, and then sealed it, and addressed it to Frodo. At first he put it on the mantelpiece, but suddenly he removed it and stuck it in his pocket. At that moment the door opened and Gandalf came quickly in. "Hullo," said Bilbo. "I wondered if you'd turn up." "I'm glad to find you visible," replied the wizard, sitting down in a chair. "I wanted to catch you and have a few final words. I suppose you feel that everything has gone off splendidly and according to plan?"
"Yes, I do," said Bilbo. "Though that flash was surprising, it quite startled me, let alone the others. A little addition of your own, I suppose."
"It was." "You have wisely kept that ring secret all these years, and it seemed to me necessary to give your guests something else that would seem to explain your sudden vanishment."
"And would spoil my joke. You are an interfering old busybody," laughed Bilbo. "But I expect you know best, as usual."
"I do, when I know anything. But I don't feel too sure about this whole affair. It has now come to the final point. You have had your joke and alarmed or offended most of your relations, and given the whole shire something to talk about for 9 days, or 99 more likely. Are you going any further?"
"Yes, I am. I feel I need a holiday, a very long holiday, as I've told you before. Probably a permanent holiday. I don't expect I shall return. In fact, I don't mean to, and I have made all arrangements. I am old, Gandalf. I don't look it, but I'm beginning to feel it in my heart of hearts. Well preserved indeed," he snorted. "Why, I feel all thin, sort of stretched, if you know what I mean. Like butter that has been scraped over too much bread. That can't be right. I need a change or something." Gandalf looked curiously and closely at him.
"No, it does not seem right," he said thoughtfully. "No, after all, I believe your plan is probably the best."
"Well, I've made up my mind anyway. I want to see mountains again, Gandalf, mountains. And then find somewhere where I can rest, in peace and quiet, without a lot of relatives prying around and a string of confounded visitors hanging on the bell. I might find somewhere where I can finish my book. I have thought of a nice ending for it. 'And he lived happily ever after to the end of his days.'" Gandalf laughed.
"I hope he will. But nobody will read the book, however it ends."
"Oh, they may, in years to come. Frodo has read some already, as far as it has gone. You'll keep an eye on Frodo, won't you?"
"Yes, I will. Two eyes, as often as I can spare them."
"He would come with me, of course, if I asked him. In fact, he offered to once, just before the party. But he doesn't really want to, yet. I want to see the wild country again before I die, and the mountains. But he's still in love with the Shire, with woods and fields and little rivers. He ought to be comfortable here. I'm leaving everything to him, of course, except a few oddments. I hope he'll be happy when he gets used to being on his own. It's time he was his own master now."
"Everything," said Gandalf. "The ring as well. You agreed to that, you remember?"
"Well, yes, I suppose so," stammered Bilbo.
"Where is it?"
"In an envelope, if you must know," said Bilbo impatiently. "There, on the mantelpiece. Well, no, here it is in my pocket." He hesitated. "Isn't that odd now?" he said softly to himself. "Yet, after all, why not? Why shouldn't it stay there?"
Gandalf looked again very hard at Bilbo, and there was a gleam in his eyes. "I think, Bilbo," he said quietly, "I should leave it behind. Don't you want to?"
"Well, yes. And no. Now it comes to it, I don't like parting with it at all, I may say, and I don't really see why I should. Why do you want me to?"
he asked, and a curious change came over his voice. It was sharp with suspicion and annoyance.
"You're always badgering me about my ring, but you've never bothered me about the other things that I got on my journey."
"No, but I had to badger you," said Gandalf. "I wanted the truth. It was important. Magic rings are, well, magical, and they are rare and curious. I was professionally interested in your ring, you may say, and I still am. I should like to know where it is, if you go wandering again. Also, I think you have had it quite long enough. You won't need it any more, Bilbo, unless I'm quite mistaken." Bilbo flushed, and there was an angry light in his eyes. His kindly face grew hard.
"Why not?" he cried. "And what business is it of yours, anyway, to know what I do with my own things? It is my own. I found it. It came to me."
"Yes, yes," said Gandalf, "but there is no need to get angry."
"If I am, it is your fault," said Bilbo. "It is mine, I tell you. My own. My precious. Yes, my precious."
The wizard's face remained grave and attentive, and only a flicker in his deep eyes showed that he was startled and indeed alarmed. "It has been called that before," he said, "but not by you."
"But I say it now, and why not, even if Gollum said the same once? It's not his now, but mine, and I shall keep it, I say."
Gandalf stood up. He spoke sternly.
"You will be a fool if you do, Bilbo," he said. "You make that clearer with every word you say. It has got far too much hold on you. Let it go, and then you can go yourself and be free."
"I'll do as I choose and go as I please," said Bilbo obstinately.
"Now, now, my dear hobbit," said Gandalf. "All your life we have been friends, and you owe me something. Come, do as you promised. Give it up."
"Well, if you want my ring yourself, say so," cried Bilbo. "But you won't get it. I won't give my precious away, I tell you."
His hand strayed to the hilt of his small sword. Gandalf's eyes flashed.
"It will be my turn to get angry soon," he said. "If you say that again, I shall. Then you will see Gandalf the Grey uncloaked."
He took a step toward the hobbit, and he seemed to grow tall and menacing. His shadow filled the little room. Bilbo backed away to the wall, breathing hard, his hand clutching at his pocket. They stood for a while facing one another, and the air of the room tingled. Gandalf's eyes remained bent on the hobbit. Slowly his hands relaxed, and he began to tremble.
"I don't know what has come over you, Gandalf," he said. "You've never been like this before. What's it all about? It is mine, isn't it? I found it, and Gollum would have killed me if I hadn't kept it. I'm not a thief, whatever he said."
"I've never called you one," Gandalf answered, "and I'm not one either. I'm not trying to rob you, but to help you. I wish you'd trust me as you used."
He turned away, and the shadow passed. He seemed to dwindle again to an old grey man, bent and troubled. Bilbo drew his hand over his eyes.
"I am sorry," he said, "but I felt so queer. And yet it would be a relief in a way not to be bothered with it any more. It has been so growing on my mind lately. Sometimes I have felt it was like an eye looking at me, and I'm always wanting to put it on and disappear, don't you know, wondering if it's safe and pulling it out to make sure. I tried locking it up, but I found I couldn't rest without it in my pocket. I don't know why, and I don't seem able to make up my mind."
"Then trust mine," said Gandalf. "It's quite made up. Go away and leave it behind. Stop possessing it. Give it to Frodo, and I will look after him."
Bilbo stood for a moment, tense and undecided. Presently he sighed.
"All right," he said with an effort. "I will."
Then he shrugged his shoulders and smiled rather ruefully.
"After all, that's what this party business was all about, really.
to give away lots of birthday presents and somehow make it easier to give it away at the same time. It hasn't made it any easier in the end, but it would be a pity to waste all my preparations. It would quite spoil the joke. Indeed, it would take away the only point I ever saw in the affair, said Gandalf. Very well, said Bilbo. It goes to Frodo with all the rest. He drew a deep breath. But now I really must be starting, or somebody else will catch me. I've said goodbye, and I couldn't bear to do it all over again. He picked up his bag and moved to the door. You have still got the ring in your pocket, said the wizard.
Well, so I have, cried Bilbo. And my will and all the other documents, too. You'd better take it and deliver it for me. That will be safest.
No, don't give the ring to me, said Gandalf. Put it on the mantelpiece. It will be safe enough there till Frodo comes. I shall wait for him. Bilbo took out the envelope, but just as he was about to set it by the clock,